morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I appreciate you joining me this morning, and it's an early one. It's 5:30 in the morning. I was up last night watching the Game 7, just beautiful hockey that was being played last night in Buffalo. My old two former teams, Buffalo Sabres, the Montreal Canadiens, going at it in Game 7 in an epic series, and it's funny. You know, being a father of eight, people often ask me, well, you know, which one's your favorite? Which child do you like the most? Like, do you have a favorite? And the cliche answer that everybody always gives is, no, I love them all the same. They're all have a piece of my heart. I love you equally. And I will be the first one to tell you, all you kids out there listening, that is definitely not true. You do have a favorite, and I'll caveat it by saying this. You love them all. Yes, I love them all because you have to. It's your duty as a parent to love your children. But I'll tell you what, I enjoy spending time with a certain kid over another kid. Our personalities maybe don't mesh. Maybe they don't gel, but I have a favorite. I don't voice it. I don't say it. I don't, hopefully don't let them pick up on it. But internally I go, oh, I like, that kid's pretty fun to hang out with. That other kid pushes my buttons. It brings me to hockey. People ask, who do you cheer for? You know, you've been on seven NHL teams. You were very wanted, John, by the NHL. And it was a bidding war every time he became a free agent. Everybody wanted you. That's why you're on so many teams. Seven of them. Who do you cheer for? Who's your team? And oftentimes I'll just kind of him and haw, because I don't really have one, or I thought I didn't until this playoff season. Back in the day, I used to like San Jose because I had some connections on the team. I was decent friends with Jumbo and Pavs and Bernsey and these guys. They all filtered their way out of San Jose, but I still feel allegiance to that team. Other times I say Chicago just because I do some work with Chicago. I was working TV with them for a while. I go there quite a bit. And then the playoffs start and I go, maybe I'm not. And then, oddly enough, I think the Canadians, you know, my last NHL team, I still do things with the Canadians sometimes. And I go, okay, I like the franchise. I like the players. But then the playoffs start. And I've said it three times now. And my true colors come out. And honestly, I'm a Sabres fan. I was a Bruins fan growing up, but we grew up in St. Catharines, Ontario. And my dad's boss, Donnie Ward, had season tickets to the Buffalo Sabres. And we would go not all the time, but whenever he would get tickets thrown his way, he would take me to the old auditorium and I would watch the Sabres. And that experience, I think, has just been ingrained in me to now I'm a Sabres fan. Being a Bruins fan growing up, playing for the Sabres for a couple seasons, now transitioning into old man phase, I got to pick a team. I think it's the Sabres. And I actively found myself cheering for them this offseason, which is a good thing, but it was unexpected because I never went out and said, I'm going to be a Sabres fan. But last night, I will tell you what, I am on the edge of my seat watching that game. I am fist pumping chances. I am like screaming at the computer. Why? Like, oh no, I was an engaged fan. And I know the result isn't what I expected or isn't what I wanted, but all in all, that's what it's all about, right? You want to feel a connection to the game. You want to feel a connection to the team. You want to feel a part of it. And I was a part of it. I was sitting there watching from however many hundred miles away, engaged in the game. And what a hell of a game it was. You win, lose, or draw, that's what you want out of a hockey game. And so far this playoffs, I don't think we've seen that. Based on all the series that have gone down, based on what Carolina has done in the East and Colorado has done in the West, there's only been two Game 7s, both played by the Montreal Canadiens, both won by the Montreal Canadiens. But as a whole, this NHL playoffs has been pretty ho-hum. You know, the Dallas-Minnesota series in the first round was supposed to be two juggernauts going head-to-head, and it kind of lived up to that. Minnesota was the better team. Edmonton flaming out early really got, you know, like McDavid, that dynamic, it was gone, so you didn't have that to talk about. Anaheim was fun, but then they get bounced by the Vegas Golden Knights in six. So it's just two West Coast teams didn't really have that sexy matchup feel for me. And then you get Colorado Vegas. And to me, it feels like Colorado, it's a foregone conclusion. If Vegas does make a series of it, I will be very, very, very impressed and very surprised. They do have the players who can do it, but as a whole, nothing out West has really caught my attention. In the East, Philly, Pittsburgh caught me for a little bit. I thought the Sidney Crosby dynamic was really fun. Could they come back from being three down? They almost did. They got it to 3-2, and then Philly wins it in game six. Carolina, it just has not been fun whatsoever. The Ottawa series, that second game when it went to overtime, if Ottawa would have won that, maybe. But then you get to Buffalo and Montreal. It's been must-watch hockey for these two teams throughout the entire series. In the first series, Buffalo-Boston, it was great. They win the first game coming back from being down 2 or 3 nothing. They storm back and win that game, the first playoff game in Buffalo in 19 seasons, and they win that game in that fashion. Boston bounces back, and it's a back-and-forth series. Buffalo finally takes it in six. And then the series that was the best series in the first round, Montreal-Tampa Bay, was just a beautiful thing. Montreal takes it to game seven. They get 9 shots on net, led by their goaltender, Jakub Dobish. They win, I think it was 1-0 or 2-1, just a fantastic game. And then going into the second round, much of the same. Carolina's with a stinker. Vegas was kind of a stinker. Colorado was a wash. They were dominant throughout the whole series. But then you get to Montreal-Buffalo. Two divisional foes, like I said, my two former teams, and you just knew it was going to be good. None of these teams were dominant. They were evenly matched. They had their strengths. Buffalo's defense, in my opinion, and I think I said it in the first round, arguably the best defense in hockey. They're big. They're fast. They're puck moving. They take chances. They're fun to watch. They're physical. And then you have the Montreal Canadiens, dynamic, young, great offense, good goaltending. Who would win in that matchup? And it lived up to the billing. And last night, I can talk about game five, how the Sabres didn't deserve to win and they got the bounces. And then game six, where they just storm back and, you know, dominate. They're up 8-3. That should have been enough to propel them to a victory in game seven. But the beautiful thing about hockey is that's why you drop the puck, man. That's why you play the game. Going back to Buffalo, what is the mindset of Montreal on that plane? Marty St. Louis, you have to have something inspirational to say this to this team. And he does his best. He says, we're going to bounce forward. We're going to be better than game six, because they were atrocious in game six after the first 10 minutes when they took a 2-0 lead, excuse me, or 3-1 lead. Yeah, after that shorthanded goal, they were absolutely atrocious. It was all Buffalo. Lindy Ruff, what do you say on the plane? Do you want to drink the Kool-Aid? Do you want to just tell these guys, yeah, then we got this, rah, rah, rah. He does his best. He books them a hotel. He said, we're not going to be distracted. We're going to focus on game seven. And it both worked. Both of these guys' strategies worked. Montreal comes out of the gates, and they're a different team. They're an absolutely different team than they were in game six. Game six, the ice was tilted. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't have any passes connecting. No shots on net. But the start of game seven, they were keeping up with the Buffalo Sabres. It was an even match. They get one goal by Philip Deneau, a decent redirection with his skate in front of the net. Then they get another goal. And then all of a sudden you go, holy crap. Like, is this going to be a rout? They're up 2-0. This game could potentially be over. But as the Buffalo Sabres have done all season long, as they have done all series long, they flip a switch. And it's time. And then it's just shift after shift after shift. Outworking, energetic, hounding the puck, throwing pucks on net, and then they finally get one. And it wasn't a great goal, but it's a Samuelson shot from the point that finally breaks the dam, and then it's like, okay, we got this. This is in the second period, and they tie the game, and then it's go, 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 go. Then they get the third goal, but then it gets called back. Beck Malenstein, I want to know your opinion on that. I thought it was no goal. I know it was quick. It was bang, bang. He pokes the puck. It's probably loose. We didn't have a good camera angle from where he poked at it. I'm guessing Greenway saw it. Maybe he didn't. Pokes it, squeaks through. Beck Malenstein pokes it in. Whistle had already gone. I don't think there's any controversy there. But Buffalo, much like the toe in the crease, Brett Hull, you will be talking about that for years to come, because what a sequence that would have been if he would have won or scored that goal, 0 points in the playoffs. He would have picked up one there. That would have been fantastic. Moving on, you go to overtime. And I got the sense that Buffalo had exhausted all of its chances. Montreal comes out of the gates in the playoffs and they start taking it to the Buffalo Sabres. I'm like, it doesn't feel good. Tage Thompson gets that chance in the slot and he holds on to it. And then he's behind the goal line and he's out of space. And in my mind, I go, that was it. That was the chance. He should have shot it earlier. They're not going to get another chance. And lo and behold, Montreal goes down. Alex Newhook gets a decent shot, but a lazy shot from the top of the circle. And it just rainbows in above Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's pad. Game over, 3-2. Montreal Canadiens are on to the third round to play the Carolina Hurricanes. The Buffalo Sabres are gone. And it feels like a season. It feels like a game that they had it and they let it slip away. They were the better team in game seven. They pushed to play. They carried the play throughout the game. There was glimpses where Montreal had opportunities, but all in all, it was the Sabres who lost that game. I don't think it was the Montreal Canadiens who won that game. And I want to start with some decisions that Lindy Ruff made that I didn't really agree with. And we'll start in net because I'm going on the fly here. I have no notes whatsoever because it's 5:30 in the morning. I went to bed right after the game. And it's funny, as the game was going on, I'm preparing for the podcast. And I had a great show planned in my head if Buffalo were to win. I was just like going to come in and rip. It was going to be great. And then as soon as that puck goes in, as soon as Alex Newhook scores his second series clinching goal in these playoffs, like, damn, okay, so we have to pivot. But I was going to talk about this all along. Lindy Ruff deciding to play Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen in game seven. For me, he looked shaky. He did not look secure. He did not look confident. Every save he made looked like he wasn't reacting to the puck. It looked like the puck was just hitting him. He wasn't tracking the puck very well. He just looked bad, in my opinion. Versus an Alex Lyon, he was seeing the puck. He was tracking the puck. He was making saves. He was aggressive. He was challenging shooters. He wanted players to shoot. And if you wash away the first 10 minutes of game six, he played an incredible series as a whole. I'm not saying this is Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's fault, but I think Alex Lyon makes that save. I think Alex Lyon doesn't let Phil Deneau go backdoor. I think he pokes his stick. I think he's challenging. I think he gets that puck before it even gets to Philip Deneau. There are just certain decisions that, you know, can cause a series to be lost. And they're big decisions. And I don't know if he could have went back to Alex Lyon based on game six, but maybe you should have. When I saw Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen as a starting goaltender for game seven, I said, damn, Alex Lyon is a better goaltender. And I don't know what they're going to do moving forward because Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is under contract for another 2 years or 3 years at 4.75 and Alex Lyon's in one more year for 1.5. But you can't win with that guy. And I've said it before, you don't need a great goaltender to win a Stanley Cup. You need a guy who's going to make the saves he should make. He should have made that save in overtime. 100%. Unequivocally, that was an easy save to make for a goaltender. It's the top of the circle. It was not screened, as far as I can see. You had a guy, you know, doing a flyby in front of the net. That happens every other shot in the NHL. You have to make that save. And it would be nice if he made a save that, you know, maybe you shouldn't make. The Philip Deneau stop in the first period. That's a save you have to make. You have to be there. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe he did look good. But to me, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen did not look good. I like saying his name. It's fun. But even his facial expressions, when they panned to him, he just looked like it was the situation was too much. And he just didn't look solid in net. All right, moving on. The back end for the Buffalo Sabres. Rasmus Dahlin is the best defenseman in hockey. I think he is the most dominant all-around 200-foot defenseman that we have in the game today. Quinn Hughes is a dynamic offensive wunderbar who can do anything he wants on the back end. I don't think he is as well-rounded, and I don't think, and I know this is going to sound stupid, but I don't think he sees the game as well as Rasmus Dahlin does. I think Rasmus Dahlin is so smart in his hockey sense and the way he moves and the way he anticipates to play and the way he can get going on the rush before other guys get going, it's impressive. Many, many times during this series and during this playoff run, I saw him just leaving the zone, blowing the zone when either Samuelson or a forward would get the puck. And I go, where's he going? And then he gets it up in the neutral zone. You go, okay, wow, that's pretty impressive. Akail Makar, physically gifted, super fast, super shifty, great hockey sense, great shot, incredible hockey player. I think Dahlin is better than them all. I think Dahlin has that edge to him. He plays in the areas guys don't like playing in. He's not afraid to go in front of the net on either side of the ice. His hockey sense is there, and he was the main reason why Buffalo was in this position in Game 7. The guy put the team on his back in Game 5, 6, and 7. He was incredible. And if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, I'm doing everything I can to keep this guy. I know they have him locked up under contract for a few more years, but he deserves his $11 million contract and more. He is the most dominant defenseman on the planet right now. Prove me wrong. He's so incredibly good. Let's move on to the other guys on the back end. Matias Samuelson, I liked him. Bowen Byram, I think he was fantastic. Couple mistakes here and there, but as a whole, he did great. Owen Power, I think we all know his misgivings. He's a very talented player. For the gifts and the talents that he has, he uses them very well. I just would like to see a little bit more of a heartbeat from him. I don't think you're ever going to get it. You can't teach that. I was talking to Darcy Tucker at an event, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And we were talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we were talking about a certain defenseman who, you know, was a big defenseman. And he was just saying they've tried to get him to do certain things. But at this stage in their career, I don't care. Like, Owen Power is only 23 years old. You would think you could teach him something. You can't. They've already been taught the things they were going to be taught when they were younger. And to ask a guy who has just learned everything for the last 15 years to all of a sudden like go outside of his comfort zone, it's very difficult to do. So Darcy was saying the coaching staff has begged and pleaded and tried to get this certain defenseman who plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs to be more aggressive, to shoot the puck more, to jump up in the play, to do more. And he just can't do it. And you can physically tell when he gets to a certain point in the offensive zone, he starts to get the shakes, he starts to get the willies, and he just throws the puck away, and then he goes back to the blue line where he feels comfortable. And going back to Owen Power, I don't think you can teach snarl. I don't think you can teach passion and to actively like be engaged in the game at all times. And some guys, they're just ho-hum laid back. And I thought Owen Power played a great series. I thought those four guys were incredible. Connor Timmins is a great 5-6 defenseman. I thought he was great. But then this is where you get into trouble. You bring in Logan Stanley. You bring in Braden Schenn. You have Kesselring. You need to have six defensemen who you can roll because, and again, I've said this a couple times. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Samuelson look gassed in the third period going back for pucks? Didn't Bowen Byram look a little tired when he's rushing the puck, maybe making some haphazard passes? Owen Power didn't have the jump that he usually has in the first period when it comes to the third period, and the same goes for Connor Timmins. Rasmus Dahlin looked incredible the whole game. I don't think the ice time affects him whatsoever. But the fact that they rolled 5D-man the whole game, Zach Metsa, I like him. I don't think he's the answer. He's 27. I don't think you can rely on him, but he'll be there next year. But you need to have someone you can trust to roll six defensemen, and the same thing can be said for the Montreal Canadiens. Arbor Jacki, for Pete's sake, I think only played 2 or 3 minutes. That's not enough. And going into the next series for the Montreal Canadiens, if you can't trust Arbor Jacki, if you can't roll him out there every game for 10 to 12 minutes, you're going to be in trouble. Because Carolina, they pressure. They're on you nonstop. There's no break. And we'll see. You saw Noah Dobson didn't look like himself in the third period, even the second period. He was definitely not the same player. Matheson, I thought, was fantastic in the series, and Luke Lane Hudson. But let's go back to the Buffalo Sabres. I don't want to get sidetracked too far. They need to find a goaltender, and they need to find another defenseman. And the reason they lose these playoffs, the reason they lose last night, is they can't hit the damn net. Every time they enter the zone, every time they take a shot. Clang, glass, smash, glass, boards, glass. I want to say they had probably 100 shot opportunities. And I haven't checked the stats, but I don't think Montreal blocked 70 shots. Every stinking time they entered the zone, they missed a net. And they had grade A chance after grade A chance after grade A chance. They deserved to win this game. It wasn't Dobish making saves. It wasn't the Montreal defenseman forcing them to shoot it wide or forcing them into bad shots. They just skied the puck over the net. And you can't do that. You have to get the puck on the net to give your chance itself to score. And it was frustrating to me to watch them time after time because the zone time was insane. They were all over the Montreal Canadiens the whole game. And they just bombed it high, bombed it wide, giving the Canadiens another breath of life when they were just smothering them. And it was maddening for me to watch. So that would be one thing, I guess, tell them to hit the net. You can't change that. As a coach, you can't, you know, put a new player in, but please hit the net. And then what do you do with Alex Tuch? Because this will be the big offseason decision for their GM, Jarmo. I don't even, Jarmo something Scandinavian. Alex Tuch coming off his contract, he's 30 years old. He's in year 7 of a great contract he signed with the Vegas Golden Knights that pays him $4.75 million. A great contract. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He's a proven producer throughout the season and the regular season. He's been in Buffalo now for 5 years. He consistently gets 50, 60, 70 points. Like he's a solid second line player. The guy gets 0 points in 7 games. In the most heated, just rivalry-driven series ever. They scored 50 goals this series combined between the two teams. Everybody was scoring, and he could not get on the board. And it wasn't for a lack of ice time. It wasn't for a lack of chances. He just could not get the puck in the net. And you can tell he was trying. He had a glorious chance. I think it was in the second period, right in the slot. Robbed by Dobish. He had another chance earlier in that sequence. Robbed by Dobish. What do you do with him? Do you invest enough to keep that guy? Because right now, the Buffalo Sabres have a very manageable contract situation. Josh Norris is their leading salary getter up front. He's making $7.95. Tage Thompson. And talk about, you know, Kevin Adams, everybody dumps on him. He signed Tage Thompson 2 years ago to a 3 years ago, I should say, to a 7-year $7 million contract. Are you nuts? This guy makes $7.1 million. He had 81 points this year. He had 72 points last year. He has 2 consecutive seasons of 40-plus goals. And he makes $7.1 million. That is the best contract in the NHL. Ryan McLeod makes 5. Jason Zucker makes 4.75. They don't have a lot of money being spent up front. Jason or Alex Tuch is from the Buffalo area. I think you have to keep him. You have to somehow keep this guy in the mix because he's, I like him. I think he's an incredible forward. I think he does just volumes for this team, whether it's on the PK, the PP. He's just so good in his, the way he plays the game. I think you have to keep him, but what's the number? Where does he fall? I don't know. I'm not going to get into the weeds in that much, but is this team as it stands a Stanley Cup contender next year? Abso-freaking-lutely. I think you make a couple minor adjustments. I would try to go out and get a goaltender if I could. I don't think Pekka Luukkonen is the guy. I try to get another defenseman. But as a whole up front, I think you're okay. The chances they got were incredible. They dominated that series in game 6 and 7. They were the better team, the large swath of this series. They proved it on the ice. They should have won, in my eyes. Maybe you would like Jack Quinn to score more? Hell yeah. And does Jack Quinn and Joshua Norris always fall down whenever they enter the offensive zone? They toe pick every single time they come into the zone, and it leaves me just screaming at the TV, like, what the hell are we doing? Like, every other time they touch the puck, they fall down. They need to work on staying on their feet. They need to work on just being aggressive and hitting in the net. But as a whole, this team was great. I thought Ryan McLeod played great. I thought Josh Doan was fantastic. And by the way, talking about, you know, foresight, this guy signed a 7-year contract that kicks in next year that pays him $6.9 million for 7 years. He got 52 points this year in his first really full season where he's getting good primetime minutes. Yes, he played 51 games in Utah. He wasn't getting the big-time minutes that he deserves. This guy's a first-line player. It wouldn't surprise me if you put up Matthew Tkachuk-like numbers next year where he's getting 60, 70, 80 points. He's putting up 100 PIMs. That's the type of player that he is. So, you know, you dump on Kevin Adams, but he did do some good things with this team. He really did. I don't know what the prospect pool looks like for Buffalo, but it was a hell of a run. It was a hell of a ride. And you got to hold your head high. They should have won that game. They should be off to the third round, but what are you going to do? We'll touch on the Montreal Canadiens because it's the Jakub Dobis show. It really is. That guy played lights out. He was the reason they won Game 7. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Obviously, the reason they won Game 7 versus Tampa Bay. He's the reason they won it last night. He stood on his head. He faced 70-plus shots coming his way. You have to be gassed at this point. He's challenging shooters. He's getting in their faces. He's yelling at the referee. He's engaged. He's that dog that you want in net. He's a challenger. He's got a temper. I love that. He was the heartbeat of this team. Looking up front, I don't think the first line played good at all. I think Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský were pedestrian. I think they need to be better if they have any chance versus the Carolina Hurricanes. They were average whatsoever. They were boosted by their power play. Rightfully so. It's lethal. It's absolutely deadly. Whenever they get a power play, you know there's a chance against probably a goal. Ivan Demidov is fantastic. There's no way fans or buts about it. He's a lethal sniper. You cannot give him a spot. He will hit it. And then the dynamic of that power play is fantastic. But it was the second, third, and fourth line who did it for the Montreal Canadiens this series. They were good. They weren't outrageously good, but they were dogged. They were good in the faceoff circle. They held the Buffalo Sabres at bay when they needed to, and they scored opportunistic goals when they needed to. But it was obviously Newhook gets the game winner. I love Jake Evans's series. I thought he was fantastic. Tessier and Deneau and Bolduc and those guys were the reason the Montreal Canadiens won. And the first line needs to obviously be better. And then the defense, I know it was a bend but don't break situation, but I loved Mike Matheson. I thought he played fantastic. Alexander Carrier played great. Lane Hudson, Noah Dobson. Caden Gooley is the biggest prick I've ever seen. He's chewing on his mouth guard. He's giving his head a shake, but he's an effective D-man who throws big hits. He throws his body around. He makes decent passes out of the zone. I like this team. And with the goaltender who makes up for a lot of mistakes that they make, I like the Montreal Canadiens. I said this going into round two. I like this team. Now we get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I've been dumping on Carolina a lot. They're a paper tiger. I don't trust them. I don't think they have that it factor. They skated through literally and figuratively the first two rounds because they've gotten a very, very favorable draw playing the Philadelphia Flyers or Ottawa Senators and then the Pittsburgh Penguins. They really haven't had a solid challenge just yet. And now they get the Montreal Canadiens, who are coming off two straight seven-game series, which is taxing. You know, and it's two physical series. It's not two powder puff series. It's not two pillow fights, like Connor McDavid would say. It's two intense series. And they win both Game 7s on the road. And now you face the Carolina Hurricanes team. It feels like they've been off for 2 weeks. You know, and everybody's healthy. And everybody's raring to go. And this is their season. They've been in this situation before in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they flame out. Not this year. So you're facing this team. And I want to come in here and say Montreal will win because for some reason I feel this hatred towards the Carolina Hurricanes. But I'm hesitant. Because do you bet against a team that, you know, won the Eastern Conference? They're the number one seed coming into this offseason. Do you bet against them? I don't know if you can. They're rested. They've been preparing. They've been scouting both teams. They've been working on their systems. They've been, like, anything they want to do, they've been doing. Going on vacation, playing golf. Who the hell cares? They've had this opportunity to get ready for this series. Freddie Anderson's been playing great. Slavin's arguably the best defenseman in hockey. Your forwards are playing lights out. If I remember correctly, it's been so long since I've seen them play. But I'm betting against them. I don't think they have that it factor. I don't think they have that guy. And they might have it in a Logan Stankoven. I really like Logan Stankoven. I think he has that, you know, that presence about him. But going into the Eastern Conference Finals, I have to go with my gut. And my gut says Montreal is going to ride this wave. Would I have preferred to pick Buffalo? Yeah, I think Buffalo was a better matchup versus Carolina. Buffalo's a bigger team. They can, you know, bounce back a little bit. They pound you a little bit more. They wear a little bit better in the corners because Carolina is a very physical team. They're very just wave after wave after wave. They try to wear you down. And the Sabres have a big D core. They have a decent size up front. They can withhold that onslaught. That is the Carolina Hurricanes. Montreal Canadiens, they've been beaten up quite a bit the first two rounds, but I think they have one more series in them. I think they will do okay versus the Carolina Hurricanes. Hopefully they'll make it a power play series and they can get some opportunities, score a couple goals in the power play. But they need Cole Caulfield to wake the hell up. That's the only way they win this series. I'm not going to say that because he didn't do anything versus the Buffalo Sabres and they still won. They improve their chances greatly if Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský wake the hell up and produce 5-on-5, because they didn't do it last series and they squeaked by and they should have lost that series. That won't happen versus the Carolina Hurricanes. They need to be their best line. They need to be energetic and they need to produce 5-on-5 or they will have a very difficult time winning this series. All right, moving west. Again, I'm excited for this series. I want to think and hope that Vegas will put up a fight, but I don't know. Much like the Carolina Hurricanes, Vegas has had a pretty easy road to get here. They played a depleted Edmonton Oilers team. They played a young Anaheim Ducks team. Now they roll into the Western Conference Finals and they get to face the juggernaut that is the Colorado Avalanche. And Colorado has rolled into this finals, dispatching LA Kings. It wasn't even close. And then you play the second best team in the NHL, in my eyes, the Minnesota Wild, and you make them look very pedestrian. And you walk through that series. You lose one game, but it was almost a formality. I think they made a decision. They wanted to win the series at home, which they haven't done in a decade. So they just said, let's just lose one on the road so we can win at home. Then we don't have to do the flight and everything. And we're all good. Moving into the finals, the only way Vegas wins this series is if you can get to the goaltenders. Is if you can get to Wedgewood and Blackwood and get them questioning their game and trying to get weak goals from them, which is possible because we saw that versus the Minnesota Wild. They had their moments where it was, they're human. He bleeds. He's bleeding. Like Rocky 4 or 5 or 3, whatever it was, and Drago bleeds. You know, you saw Colorado show some humility where it was like, okay, they are human. They do have issues that they need to work on, and it is the goaltending. I don't know if that is enough for the Vegas Golden Knights to overcome, but, you know, don't rule out the Vegas Golden Knights just yet. And Mitch Marner is the main reason why. He's been fantastic in these playoffs, and Barbashev has been just as good, and Eichel needs to be there. All of these guys need to play their best. We don't know the status of Mark Stone. Tomas Hertl needs to continue to score, but if they are going to win, it has to be the defense. And they have the guys, you know, Anderson and Hanifin and Theodore and these guys who can contain what is Nathan MacKinnon. But I don't think they can do it for very long. So obviously I'm taking Colorado out of the West. I'm taking Montreal out of the East. And then it's just going to be a train wreck in the Stanley Cup Finals because I think Colorado is going to walk through this only losing one or two games this whole playoffs because they're just that good. And then you're going to look at this playoff series and you're going to go, damn. That Buffalo-Montreal series, that was pretty special. And we got to watch it firsthand last night. It was a hell of a Game 7 in overtime. What more could you ask for? Win, lose, or draw, both of those teams deserve to hold their head high. Yeah, you know, would I like Buffalo to win? But as a hockey fan, like I stated at the top of the show, it was a hell of a game. It was entertaining. It got me engaged. I was screaming at the screen going for Buffalo. I know Montreal won. I'm still happy about the whole situation. Classy Buffalo fans like they always are. Let's go Buffalo, baby. They'll be back next year. And I appreciate everybody's support. Hopefully you can come back and enjoy my preview tomorrow when I get on. I got a little speaking event this week, so I'm going to do a couple earlier shows and I'll get those on the docket. But I appreciate the support, everybody. It's not always perfect, but life isn't perfect. And I'm doing my best. And I will talk to everybody later this week. Have a good one. Cheers.